Is your inventory control out of control? Look no further than the Atlantic Advantage system, the lean way to manage inventory and reduce costs. Atlantic Advantage offers automatic replenishment, automatic delivery, and automatic price reductions if market prices drop on your shipping, janitorial, and safety products.
Call me, David Spencer, owner of Atlantic Paper and Twine, at 1-800-613-0950 to get the Atlantic Advantage system working for you, or check us out at atlanticpaper.com.
Call 1-800-613-0950.
This is the Lean Nation with Carl Wattenstein on AM 790.
The Lean Nation is a systematic approach to identifying and eliminating waste. We'll show you how to do more with less and how to weather any economic storm.
Open your mind because it's time to get lean with Captain Carl.
The Lean Nation on your station for talk and business, AM 790.
Hey, and welcome back to Lean Nation on AM 790, your station for talking business. We're into hour two. We had some great guests, Linda. We had Jim Buttolaro with us from Productivity, Inc. And now we have Mark DeLozio. And Mark was directly mentored by the originators of the Toyota Production System, TPS. Mark C. DeLozio has directed the implementation of lean principles and strategies globally. For more than 25 years, in 2001, Mr. DeLozio founded Lean Horizons Consulting and today leads a global management team overseeing corporations, geographic, industry, and client services. Mark, welcome to the Lean Nation.
Oh, thank you very much.
And you know, you look like a young guy in this picture and you were mentored by the originators of TPS. Tell me a little bit more about that, how you ended up getting that deep an understanding of this.
Actually, that picture that you see is probably excess and obsolete inventory. It's a younger picture. But I was working for a company called Danaher Corporation, which, you know, arguably could be one of the first companies into the modern lean movement back in 1988. And I was working at one of their divisions. I was a finance guy, actually, and I was working at one of their divisions called Jake Brake or Jacobs Manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And no matter where you turned, we were not doing well as a company. We lost a lot of market share, had to give back a lot of price to the field, and we weren't doing well financially and operationally. So the president of the company at that time, George Konensaker, he hired me in, and one of my first roles was going to be to put in a lean accounting system. Wasn't called lean back then, but he wanted me to be one of the first guys to go over with a study team to study the Toyota production system. And we worked directly for the lieutenants of Tayashi Ono, a consulting group called Shingajitsu, which I believe is still around today. And we were mentored by them, and you know, we were all called cement heads and basically got us to maybe about kindergarten or maybe first grade, and there's so much more to go when you really talk about lean. So we brought that back to Jake Brake and made some pretty remarkable progress in the first couple of years that we tried it. We had a new CEO come in from Danaher in 1990, a guy named George Sherman, and George wanted to take what we did at Jake Brake globally for all the Danaher companies, and he asked me to lead that charge in the early 90s. So that's kind of how we got our feet wet in the whole movement.
Fantastic. And you know, what a great indoctrination so early on too, because, you know, this really is a business strategy and it has, you know, a lot of validity to it. And so many people skirted around it with all kinds of other, you know, total quality and all kinds of other things during that time instead of just diving in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we did make some classic mistakes that my consulting company today, Lean Horizons, is trying to not allow companies to make so that their speed to value is even faster than what we had at Danaher. And some of the classic mistakes is that we got very enamored with the Toyota production system. And at the end of the day, the goal isn't the tools of the Toyota production system. The goals basically are the goals stated by your stakeholders, which are your shareholders, your customers, your employees, and even your suppliers. I put into that bucket as well. So really focusing on the strategic breakthroughs is really key when you're doing this. The other thing is the whole concept of just using tools and copying exactly what Toyota did wasn't the right answer either. And you know, matter of fact, we made a very tactical mistake. We went to Toyota and we saw their suppliers and Toyota themselves, and we noticed that a lot of these companies weren't using statistical process control, SPC. Mm-hmm. And so we came back and said, hey, we're not going to use SPC because Toyota's not using it. Well, little did we know, and it sounds so elementary now, but back then it wasn't, little did we know that Toyota built quality into their process, and
right.
They didn't need SPC. So we took SPC out. Our quality, which is already teetering on the brink, went down even further. So, you know, what I always say is that companies really need to customize the approach to their particular, not only to their particular situation, but to their culture as well. It's good to benchmark other companies. It's good to get best practices, but you really have to think about your company and what's going to work and what's not going to work. And so, you know, we made some of those classic mistakes up front that I think we're smarter today, but we're still learning.
Yeah, and you know that benchmark is so critical. We're really working hard on a fully integrated pull system mixed model, and you know we've been going through our Kanbans and having a heck of a time with them, and we're going to go out and benchmark Medtronics in Connecticut where they have a system like that. And basically my thinking for going as we go and do our Gemba tour there is just to see, you know, how their system works and what were some of the pitfalls, and does it look like, you know, something we've envisioned in our head, and how can we adapt it to our process, and are we going to have any aha moments, breakthroughs? I love that, going to benchmark and get a breakthrough that somebody looks at it and says, geez, if we took this and twisted it around a little bit, we could get over that hurdle. You know, that's the beauty of it. Not let's scrub our whole system and start again because they're doing X, Y, Z.
Exactly. And I think it's important for companies, especially if they're starting out, is, you know, a phrase that I learned over the years from our CEO at Danaher, George Sherman, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And because many companies are doing a lot of good things that you want to protect and you want to build off of. So it's not a question of coming in, for example, and just taking and you know, if you walked in and said to a CEO, we're gonna replace your culture with a lean culture, that's a threat. And what's in many cultures are good things that should be built upon. Instead of going in and saying, hey, we think we need to augment the culture with some lean principles, but let's keep what we got that's working and improve the things that aren't working. And so that's a real key. Now, you mentioned level loading and Kanban and, you know, one-piece flow and the like. Mm-hmm. Some of the mistakes I've seen people make is to directly go to a Kanban with their supply base without level loading their own production in their own factory. And that starts talking about now more of a demand management or sales and operations planning process that really needs to be perfected before you can take this out to your suppliers. Because if you're sending yourself internally inconsistent, you know, inventory and scheduling signals, those signals are going to amplify when you get out to the supply base. So I always tell people when they're looking at a value stream, the last thing you want to do is deal with your suppliers, and let's get your act together first before we go out and ask them to do what we want them to do. So.
Yeah, we've had some good successes with a handful of suppliers, and you know we stumble along. We're a small organization, so we're fitting it in our daily schedule. And we were really going to talk about the mindset change today about recovery versus the disaster control before and just sustaining what the heck you have. And there are a couple different mindsets here as people go forward and try and roll out into this new economy that everybody says is getting better. So you had some thoughts on that you shared with Linda. And if you want to get into that now, we can, or we can have some other discussion.
No, I think that's fine. Yeah, I can talk to you about that. You know, as I look past over the last couple of two, three years that we've been in this economic, you know, recession, basically, I talk to a lot of CEOs and a lot of C-level people in some pretty big companies and smaller ones. And for the most part, most people took the road of let's cut costs. and there were some real drastic measures taken in terms of cost cutting. What we found is that a lot of these companies cut costs in the wrong areas, and now they're looking to profitably grow their business. They protected their margin as best they could, but now they're looking to effectively grow because they've either lost share or lost revenue along with a decline in industry, and they're looking now to come back and say, hey, how do we grow this thing? You know, how do we profitably grow this thing? But a lot of companies cut in the wrong places. For example, I know companies that cut pretty heavily in the new product development areas. Mm-hmm. I know companies who cut back in their marketing and sales efforts pretty heavily. Matter of fact, I have one client, a rather large company, which obviously will go unnamed, that actually told their salespeople that they couldn't travel anymore. And when I heard that, I said, that's like telling a surgeon that you can't use a scalpel, you know? Mm. And what happened was they found that wasn't very effective, and about a year later, they laid all those sales guys off. So, you know, it causes you to do a lot of crazy things. And the whole adage of tying, you know, lean into headcount reduction is a real mistake. You have to have a very good answer to somebody's question: what's going to happen to me when my job gets eliminated? And there's an adage out there today that says LEAN means less employees are needed, and that's kind of the joke that's going around. But you know what? In some companies, it's not a joke, and that's exactly why some companies undertake lean, is to reduce headcount, cut costs, and not really looking at it as a strategic growth play to grab market share and to really take the company to the next level.
Mark, I'm going to hold you there. You're listening to Lean Nation on AM 790. We have Mark Delozio with us, and we'll be right back after this quick message.
Make sense of today's business news with Don Sowa's Money Talk this afternoon at 5 on AM 790.
Hey, it's K-Dub here with Lean Nation, and the number one question I get from listeners is, where do I go for help? I always say start with your local manufacturing extension partnership, and if you're in Connecticut, then you're really in luck because you have ConStep. You might remember that we broadcast from the ConStep conference last fall, and I was so impressed with them, the metrics that they've done. Think about this. In the last 5 years, they've provided on-site consulting and critical help to more than 1,600 Connecticut businesses. And those companies made some huge gains. $845 million in top-line growth, $41 million in production cost and reduction, and they added or retained more than 4,000 jobs. ConStep has some great workshops. Go to ConStep.org, and they have a free lunch hour webinars on Wednesdays. Get complete program descriptions and find out about their services and see their event schedule at ConStep.org, and that's ConStep.org, or call them at 800-266-6672 today. Hey, and welcome back to the second hour of the Lean Nation. And if you're just tuning in, we have Mark Delozio with us, the president and CEO of Lean Horizons. And you know what? On the Lean Nation today, we're going to talk about the perspectives of how business leaders are coping with the recovery and managing resources for growth. And before we left for the break, Mark was talking about people that thought they were lean, but doing really unlean things, because now we're starting to see a swing in the tide. And you were talking about people cutting a sales force, and not cutting the sales force, but having people that were used to traveling to get a business book going, and all of a sudden they can't travel. Tough stuff. So what other kinds of things do you see business leaders struggling with that they thought they were lean, but they really weren't lean?
Well, there's a number of things. I was, I guess, credited with the designation of having developed the first lean accounting system in the U.S. back at Jake Break in the late 80s. And what we tried to do there is just use some very common sense understanding of what drives behavior and mm-hmm. what measures drive certain behaviors. So I can give you a couple of examples there that really do have an impact on the way leaders think. In one particular situation, the chief financial officer of this about a $2 billion company insisted that machine efficiency and uptime be the key driver for return on investment. And
so he was looking at OEE numbers?
Exactly, looking at OEE, looking at in particular just looking at the uptime. And what happened was because they were so focused on that, and that was baked into everybody's bonus plan and everything else, there was a disincentive in the company to actually produce the right product and do changeovers. I'm going to produce product A no matter what, because even though I have orders for product B, I'm not changing over because that's going to hurt my efficiency number. Or I'm not going to do TPM on the equipment, and machines were continually breaking down because they weren't maintained. So I asked the CFO, would you take your new car to drive it around the block 100 times tonight when you got nothing to do? And he said, no, why would I do that? It would cause wear and tear on my car, and it would cost me a lot of money. I said, well, that's exactly right. What you're doing with your equipment in your own factory. Why are you asking your people to do that when you yourself wouldn't do that? So it was a bad measure. It was something that caused dysfunctional behavior. There's a number of measures like that, absorption, in terms of absorption accounting, which really just promotes the building of inventory, whether you need it or not. I had one sales policy in another company. Customers were trained that if they ordered at the end of the quarter, they would get these drastic discounts. And that was a way to incent and dress up the P&L at the end of the quarter. Well, what happened was 75-80% of their orders came in the last 2 weeks of the quarter. And here's a company that was trying to do level loading, hijunka level scheduling, and they actually literally had to shut down their manufacturing operations the last week of the quarter and bring all their operators over to the warehouse to ship product. When they went back the very next week, at the first week of the new quarter, it was chaos. So, again, a lot of the policies that we put in place seem to be reasonable, but when you really think about lean principles, and the behavior that these measures drive, it really is counterproductive to a good lean implementation.
Well, if you went to Japan in the early days with Danaher and learned from Shingijitsu and the disciples from Taiichi Ono, the deeper understanding is that someone should have challenged that CFO, and somebody should have challenged if sales and marketing was driving the deep discounting, to show what happens down the value stream or material and information flow. Or there's so many different ways to show this that it's probably a short-lived strategy, right, to get people to speak up a little bit and interject.
Well, you're exactly right, and I think there's a lot of effort out there today. We're trying to teach the C-level suite all of the tools. And I think that's nice to have. I think if they can learn the tools, that's great. But I'm more interested in teaching the leadership of the company, teaching them what fundamental principles Lean is built on. And once you understand those principles, then you can go back and start challenging your existing practices and your existing policies and what have you. So I'm more interested in having a CEO understand the principles as opposed to understanding, for example, how you would calculate a tack time or a Kanban quantity or what have you. And not to say that wouldn't be a bad thing for them to understand, but it's really all revolves around the principles. It was interesting to go to Toyota, and I remember asking the question of a very senior person at Toyota, and they said, I asked him, how is it that you can allow all your competitors, GM, Ford, Chrysler, all these competitors to come into your factory? And the answer he gave me was, what they need to know, they cannot see. Mm-hmm. And what he meant, it sounds so Japanese, but it really was true. What he was really talking about was the thought process, the culture, the mindset that really drives all of these things within the lean transformation. So They didn't care that that GM came in and saw one-piece flow and saw andons and saw standard work and all that, because of the management system underneath it and the culture was what was really driving it.
Well, think about you and your SPC.
Exactly.
And came back and said, we don't need to do it. These guys aren't doing it. But there are many other little small steps and articulations that they did to prevent them, quality at the source, from having to do it after the fact, where it's very costly in an SPC true model.
Oh, no question about it. No question about it. One of my customers was Hino Motors, which is a subsidiary of Toyota. And I sold directly into Hino in Japan. And we went in there, and they helped us build our line back here in the States with a 3P production preparation process that we were learning from Shingijutsu, and also we learned a lot from Hino. And I took an engineer into a connecting rod line because I wanted to see a cell that fundamentally was not an engine line, because we didn't make engines. I wanted to see something that was more analogous to what we did with a Jake brake. And they didn't allow us to take cameras into the cell. By the way, the youngest piece of equipment was about 10 years old in
right.
itself. And every single piece of equipment had its Pokeyokes, its Jidokas, Hanadashi devices for, you know, a Chaku-Chaku load line and what have you. And we expressed interest in two things that we wanted to see, because the engineer said, I'll do a drawing for you. Well, we went through the line. We spent a full 8 hours in that line. The next morning, we had an 8 o'clock meeting. The engineer came to me with the same clothes on he had the day before. His hair was really disheveled. He hadn't shaved. And he did 15 drawings for us because he saw we were interested in other parts that we just weren't too bold enough to ask for.
Right.
And he did 15 drawings and looked at me in the eye, handed me the drawings, and he said, Mr. DeLuzio, I would like your line to be like our line. And he handed me those drawings. You know, which,
nice.
By the way, we incorporated all those ideas into our cell. So it was really interesting to see that. As a matter of fact, the drawings were a lot better than the picture was anyway, because we had he wrote out and labeled things and before and after, and you know, it was really, really an education. And that's the mindset that they have and how seriously they take it.
Oh, they take it very seriously. Were you at the Shingo Prize down in Cincinnati this year?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I did a workshop on strategy deployment. I was down to see the Lean community. I'm sure, as you know, is a very small world, and it's good to see everybody again. I haven't seen them in a while.
But the most profound presentation that I saw, and if you remember seeing me there, I was sitting in the front row of every presentation. I brought my lovely wife with me because she's very interested in this, was Senji, and I can't remember his last name, with Toyota. Remember, they came over, they had the translator.
Yes. Yes. I had to miss that. I had to fly out a day before.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You've seen the real deal. You've gone to the real place. But that presentation to me, I sat in the front row because I wanted to see his face. I wanted to see the excitement about him talking about the things, because if you're sitting in the back, it gets lost. And I wanted to have eye contact. But he brought up, the most profound thing was he brought up the five S's.
Yep.
And you were talking about Kaizen. Where's Kaizen come from? Where is the Kaizen written? What is this whole thing? You know, it's deeper thinking. But the one that stuck out for me was the fifth S that everybody talks about, sustaining. Well, sustaining is kind of an ambiguous word to me. And, you know, sustain what? Sustain, you know, what are we doing? Sustaining. He had on his translation, doing what we agreed upon. As an organization. And to that, it stood out just so glaring. You know what, guys? We're doing all these things, but let's all continue to do what we agreed upon, and that's our sustaining part.
Exactly.
So, you know. Well, when we come back, Mark, we got to take another break. We're going to try and get into, you know, business leaders' minds and coping with the recovery and managing resources for growth. So think about that. We'll come back with some more Lean Nation after this break. Hey, welcome Welcome back to Lean Nation on AM 790, your station for talk and business. We have Mark Delozio with us here. He is the president, the man with Lean Horizons. And Mark, we're trying to get to the point, and you've been getting there, with business leaders coping with recovery and managing their resources for growth. Because at that Shingo as well, the buzz going around there was that a lot of the supply chain is falling down because they've made these gross cuts of what they thought Lean was about. Or even if they didn't even have a Lean strategy, they just ducked their heads and said, we can't afford this, we can't afford that. And then now all of a sudden, a little bit of pressure is being put on them to supply faster, higher quality, whatever the mandate is, and they can't do it. So what should some of our forward-looking and forward-thinking be to catch up to speed here for this recovery if it is in fact going to happen?
Well, you know, Carl, there are a lot of mindsets out there today, different mindsets from CEO to CEO. Obviously, we can all agree that all these CEOs have on their mind is, you know, profitable growth, and everybody wants to do that, and everybody wants their stock to do well, and what have you, and their investors and shareholders and what have you. But, you know, as you really look at this, I think there's a disconnect in CEOs' minds between developing a lean culture and financial performance. Or performance for your customer according to what they measure you on. So they don't have that fundamental understanding in a lot of cases. Some do, don't get me wrong, but many don't have that fundamental understanding that if you're going to really sustain this, it's got to be baked into the culture. And there has to be mechanisms for leaders to be able to be held accountable, and not only by their shareholders but also by their employees. To be held accountable and what have you. And the mindset with what we learned at Toyota, and John Shook out of the Lean Enterprise Institute, and he and I talked about this quite a bit, is that the role of a leader in a company is to develop your people. And that's how you get sustainability over time. I don't know if every leader out there today, especially here in the States or anywhere else for that matter, really thinks that developing their people is their number one responsibility. Most leaders feel compelled to try to drive improvements and solve problems at their level. Where, you know, we start looking at Toyota, for example, and they attempt to solve problems at the very lowest level in the organization possible. So there's a real disconnect as far as the role of leadership as we look at this. Now, you know, you mentioned 5S, and a comment on that. We were taught that the sustaining part of 5S, which, you know, everybody struggles with, because I think you can intellectually, I think you can see the concepts relatively easy, but doing it is a whole other thing. And so using 5S as a predictive indicator as to whether or not you're going to have the rigor and discipline in your organization to be able to sustain any lean tool or approach that you use, usually can be determined up front by looking at the state of the 5S's. And so if you can't do it with 5S, with your general housekeeping and safety and what have you, you're not going to follow, for example, the discipline of a Kanban rule or the discipline of standard work or whatever the case may be. So it's that culture that sometimes CEOs are very reluctant to invest in, and they want to see a return on investment on the first dollar they spend on a lean transformation, and it doesn't always work that way.
No, you know, we're impatient, and as I sit here and listen to you, Mark, we're impatient as leaders. This takes a lot of development time. I mean, Toyota's been very patient if you look at the time that they've been doing this over generations, a couple generations, maybe even three or four, more than that. And the development of people, you know, your people, your leaders, your future leaders, is really gut-wrenching work because you have to change mindsets, and that's not always fun, it's not always easy, and it doesn't happen overnight. Also that you know, the other presentation we had, and I can't remember who it was in the big auditorium where they showed the performance indicators of dollars returned on investment that Toyota outperforms any other motor company. What was it, maybe three or four times? Could I be right with that, Mark?
Yeah, you could, yep.
I mean, so now if you're a business leader and you're looking for short-term dollars, and you're from the accounting group, short-term dollars are great, but where do they get you in the end run? When there's a regime change in the organization, if you're a big, big group, do they have something to grow that organization off? Are they going to bring in their own set of rules for how they grow dollar-wise to give back to shareholders and XYZ and no one has patience, man. There's no patience out there. We're a small company, and I'm the guy, and I can see this, but it's still patience. I get impatient, too, waiting for certain things, and developing the people is really hard work, but we're putting a big emphasis on that. So,
Exactly. And you know, Carl, I think the other thing that gets people in trouble, and we try to counsel our clients as much as we can on this, is that focus on two or three key things. Don't focus on 25 things or 50 things. Focus on two or three key breakthrough objectives. And this was a turning point for Danaher Corporation. And I'm happy to say we're on our second CEO right now with Larry Culp in the driver's seat as CEO. And Larry's still using the process that I put in place at Danaher called policy deployment. Policy deployment, I happen to be calling that strategy deployment here in Lean Horizons, but focusing your lean transformation to those strategic breakthrough objectives is a real key, because otherwise the mistake we made early was, you know, we became enamored with all the tools and we started just, you know, Kaizening everything and for the sake of Kaizen, for the sake of, you know, how many people do we train and how many Kaizens do we hold and all that. Well, your customers don't really care about that. Your customers really care about getting a quality product with great service, on-time delivery, and at a good value, and so a lot of times we measure ourselves in a lean transformation with our internal measures that the customer doesn't care about. Strategy
right.
deployment or policy deployment at Danaher is still being used today, and this is 20 years after I put it in, and I'm very happy about that. But if Danaher hires the wrong CEO down the line, let's say after Larry, there's a possibility that it all could break down. And George Sherman was very careful about hiring Larry into that role and grooming him and mentoring him, and he's done a very nice job with the company. And so it's good to see that things that we put in place way back then are still being used today. But focusing on those key strategic breakthrough objectives and also deciding, quite frankly, what you're not going to do, that needs to be a conscious decision. What am I not going to do? Because otherwise you end up with a lot of solutions looking for a problem. So we want to focus the lean transformation on some real key things, two or three or four key breakthrough objectives, and really drive it hard and do what's really meaningful for all stakeholders, not just shareholders.
Well, you know, to George's credit, you know, for getting Larry on board there and taking the time to show him this stuff, but you had something that you implemented, Mark, that was well thought, well founded, and can withstand, sustainable for all these years, that, you know, you improve on that. And that's what Toyota did. That's their key success. And going to a lot of these lean conferences across the country here is that when most people were transferred or moved up the ladders in Toyota, in that organization, that their first several months, 6 months, were just trained to observe. And what business school in the country trains you that you get a new job, sit back for a while, watch where all the eggs are lined up before you start breaking eggs and thinking you know how to fix things?
Exactly. And, well, you know, it's interesting because, again, talking to John Shook, he told me that at Toyota, a leader in a company in Toyota cannot comment, even make a comment about a problem if they haven't observed the problem firsthand. And so, you know, how many times have you seen that where, you know, everybody seems to have the solution to the problem, but they haven't even defined what the problem is. And never mind observing it, just trying to even define what it is. And so you know, we lose our way a lot of times with this, and it takes a lot of care and patience to get it right.
You bet it does. I'm going to hold you there. We're going to take a quick break. We're back up. We're going to do a wrap-up, Mark, and talk about some things that people can do during these recovery times. You're listening to Lean Nation, AM 790. We'll be right back. Hey, I'm Carl from the Lean Nation. Let me tell you about GBMP. This is a not-for-profit provider of lean training. They're on a mission to keep jobs here in the U.S. See them at GBMP.org. GBMP also has a great award-winning lean training videos from their now-famous Toast Kaizen DVD to Kanban to idea systems and policy deployment that we're talking about here today on the show. GBMP now has 18 different titles ordered direct from their website at gbmp.org. GBMP's Bruce Hamilton, the Toast Guy from Toast Kaizen and a regular guest on this show, has a new blog dedicated to improving lean transformations and sharing informative and entertaining stories. Subscribe today at oldleandude.org. Let's all rally to keep manufacturing strong in the Northeast. Save the dates, October 5th and 6th, the Northeast Shingo Conference theme, Made Lean in America. It's really important to our country and important to our economy. We'll highlight Northeast companies that are world leaders with world-class lean operations. For more information, visit neshingoprize.org and sign up.
Weekday mornings at 10 is Bloomberg Radio on AM 790. It's your money. It's your
505-2727.
You're listening to The Lean Nation with Captain Carl Wattenstein on AM 790. Wednesday at 3, it's The Next Level with Anthony Gemma, featuring Rhode Island's business leaders and the CEOs of America's most prominent companies. Now, more of The Lean Nation with Carl Wattenstein on your station for talk and business, AM 790.
Hey, and welcome back to the Lean Nation on AM 790. We have Mark Delozio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons. He's on the show today with us. We're talking about, you know, how business leaders are coping with the recovery and managing their resources for growth. We were in duck and cover for such a long time, and now we're starting to see some signs that things are picking up. And some of it is due to environmental with, you know, things happening around the world, fuel and different things. So people looking at reshoring, right, Mark, as well as just growing.
Absolutely. And you know, Carl, I think the real key here is if companies arbitrarily, I don't want to say arbitrarily, but if they did not put a lot of thought into their, in terms of their cost cutting that they've done, and they're at a point now where they have to focus on rebuilding business processes, then that's going to be tough for a lot of these companies. They're going to lag behind. But the ones that focused on process, which strategy deployment, again, really focuses on the process to get sustainability and repeatability, if they kept those processes intact, they'll be a lot better off, and I know many companies who have done that, they'll be a lot better off as they try to capitalize and regain share in the future as you move through.
Well, as you have good processes, and you know our friend Mike Rother talks about, you know, point Kaizen, process Kaizen, and system Kaizen.
Exactly.
And if we were doing this process Kaizen and supporting that with the point Kaizens and then looking up one other ladder into system Kaizen, because that's where we're playing now, is in the whole system. How do we get better at our system? Boy, there's all kinds of opportunities for market growth in your companies that if you have strong processes, strong systems, and people can do things at the floor level or the point solution level, you can venture into all kinds of new markets. If people come at us and say, can you do it? We say, yeah, just tell us how high and we're ready to go. Let's do it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, as you're looking at coming out of this recession, and obviously growth is on everybody's mind, how do you use your new product development opportunities as a competitive weapon in the marketplace today. You know, how do you use that? And lean really makes you think through how you can strategically utilize not only your operational effectiveness, but your introduction to new products and what have you, where you know, all the high costs are designed out up front and the quality is built into those products, as opposed to waiting till they hit the floor and then you have to go back and kind of do a, as you say, a point Kaizen to eliminate those issues. It's very
you got it. Tell it. Tell us how we find you, Mark, because I hear the music. We're going to post you on Facebook, and we're going to put a pretty picture up for you. But tell us how our listeners can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on my website, www.leanhorizons.com.
Great, and I look forward to meeting you. We didn't get an introduction out there. It was a blast having you on the show. I hope to have you back again, and we're going to do a lot of Facebook posts for you, Mark. Thank you.
That's great. Yeah, we're neighbors. I'm in Connecticut, so maybe we should figure out how we can meet.
You got to do a gimbal walk out here, brother, and we'll see you. That's it for the Lean Nation today. We're over and out.